Hello, TSF family, and welcome to episode 15 of season 7 of This Spiritual Fix. Today we are talking more about the villains, particularly the evasive expert, the righteous bully, and more. Enjoy. This Spiritual Fix. Two mystical mamas hacking the self-help game.
With Anna Stromquist.
And Christina Wiltse.
Hello, Anna.
Hey, Christina. How are you?
I am hanging in there. I am the cat in the poster. That's just like, you remember that old poster?
That where they were like in your guidance counselor's office?
Yeah, exactly.
The cat just hanging in there.
Yeah.
I know you're being challenged in many ways. I don't know how much you want to reveal to the audience and if you're coasting along with it or if you are losing your shit. Like, what's
going on? I'm actually not losing my shit at all. I'm actually incredibly grateful. I feel like probably at this point, like 5 years of talking to people about how to deal with ego deaths. And I'm just like, oh, it's an ego death. Let go of the sides of the slide. Like, it's just gonna go, right? No idea what it's gonna look like when you finally get to the end of that slide. So yeah, I'm getting hit in health. I'm getting hit in home, in all of it. And it's been amazing because I'll talk about it later when we talk about the evasive expert, but like the inner villains has actually helped me so freaking much. I'm doing kind of advanced play, as I would call it, in some ways, because I am recognizing that like if you think of the inner villains as on a scale of resonance, if you push one of those arcs into its like very fast resonance, like the legend place, it actually helps the other ones where you're having trouble to also get into that space. So for me, like every night, I used to be bad about doing gratitude, indiscriminate gratitude practice at bedtime. Every night now, I'm just like, I am there. Right? Like every morning I'm just there and I'm just like, I feel so incredibly grateful for everything that I have, everything that I don't have, everything that I want, everything that I don't want. And I'm just like, I'm just really fucking grateful. And I'm so, there are logistics and there are mental things, but it's been exceptionally useful and helpful for me during this time. So yeah.
Yes. I'm going to talk about it later in the episode, but the villain work has been so useful in like helping with some friends, some different conflicts they've experienced, some things I've experienced. And the work is really, really useful. Like in some ways I'm like, this is 10 times more useful than the primal wounds. Where was this? But then it took time for you to channel it and all that jazz. But yeah, it's like really, it's just more, I don't know how to explain it. It's just more nuanced.
Yes. And that's the real trick, right? Because even the terminology primal wound, it has a tendency to resonate in the tender, vulnerable part or in its worst part, the victim. And we used to talk about it. We used to talk about how people with rejection wounds would reject, but we kind of didn't touch into it a lot, right? To recognize that that rejection wound will show up in so many different ways, depending on who you're with and what's going on. That's the reason that I enjoyed is because like, every arc has that wounded child part of it. Absolutely. Like that is a crucial aspect of it, but it also has its rescuer form, its persecutor form, its like pinnacle villain form and its heroic form. So it's important to have more of a ability to move through things. So it's mm-hmm. good. It's good. Well, so
go ahead. I was going to say my son, actually both my kids take a creative writing course online. Mm-hmm. We're not being sponsored by OutSchool or anything, but I'm just a huge fan of the OutSchool program, which is like, you can pick any topic and they really love this course. And what the topic for the creative writing 1 week was anti-hero. And I didn't know what an anti-hero was. And so I was like, well, tell me, what is an anti-hero? And they're like, it's a villain who directly or indirectly assists the hero in their arc. Mm-hmm. And I just thought that was so cool. Like, maybe we're all just not even villains. We're all anti-heroes, you know?
I would say that that's absolutely the case. I think that, like you said, like it's a rare person who is a pinnacle villain for a sustained period of time, right? That's usually just an outburst, right? And so if we recognize that all the subtypes are forms of anti-heroes that are all working to get the gift of whatever their position is and move to a more heroic space that's like more self-loving, then amazing, right? Mm-hmm. Amazing. So tell me about time blindness, Anna. We were going to talk about that in our prelude.
Okay. Well, I don't know when I first heard the term time blindness, but when I heard the definition, I was like, OMG, this is my husband. You know, I love to diagnose him with things to just help me understand him a little better. But time blindness is basically the inability to perceive or track time in a way that other people do. And it's not a true diagnosis. Like, you can't really be diagnosed with time blindness, but it's just a term for not being able to track time, you know, procrastinating, saying you're going to be somewhere on time, not being on time. And I know that, like, in my marriage, since my husband has this, when he takes on a task, I now become the timekeeper of it. I have to tell him, okay, you said you were going to do that thing at 3:00. It's 2:45. You got 15 minutes. Hey, you got 5 minutes. Hey, it's 3:00. It's time to do that thing. And then I have gotten annoyed and even villainous about it, because I'm like, why do I have to also now be the timekeeper? Like, why can't you also manage the time of it? But it is a common thing that happens. And I have a friend who has a husband with very severe ADHD, and he has time blindness. And so she has to do a lot of the things that I do. And, it can be really frustrating to live with someone with time blindness. It could probably be frustrating to have time blindness. Although it seems like the people I knew who have it are just like happy-go-lucky about it. They don't seem to like get that annoyed. I don't know. So it's like, you know, some of the other, like some ways that it looks is they don't realize how much time has passed. They'll procrastinate until the last minute. They'll struggle to estimate how much time an activity will actually last. Yeah. And it's funny because, like, an example will be, you know, my parents are leaving for the airport, and my husband's like, they're like, the Uber's going to be here in 10 minutes. He's like, I got to run downstairs and just send an email and I'll be back in 5 minutes. Well, he comes up in 20 minutes and they've left. And he's like, where are they? And I'm like, well, you said you'd be back in 5 minutes, but they left in 10 minutes and you're back up here in 20 minutes. So it's just like this complete lack of awareness of time. Right. And according to the Henry Ford Health website, it's linked to conditions that impair executive functioning, which include things like ADHD, alcohol use disorder, anxiety, autism spectrum disorders, depression, obsessive compulsive disorder, and traumatic brain injury. So those are some of the conditions that
could show time blindness.
Time blindness because of executive functioning disorders. I've made up my own term of calendar blindness. Like, I don't have time blindness. And I think it's because of my job or my lifestyle, but like, I'm very good about getting to places on time, knowing how long something's going to take. Like, I know it's going to take me this long to get to my patient, but it's going to take me 5 minutes to park my car, get out of my car, and walk into their house. So like, I'm really good at like managing my time on the day to day, like really, really good in juggling everyone's schedule. Yes. But I have terrible calendar blindness, meaning I have to book and rebook dentist appointments constantly because I'll like schedule everyone's appointment on the same day, you know, or like I'll cross check my phone calendar with my written calendar on the mark. And it's like, I constantly double book and overlap things. So like, I have a really horrible perception of time. Like, we were getting ready to leave for a flight and I checked the flight the night before and I find out, oh, we're leaving on Monday, not Sunday. We have a whole extra day here in Atlanta. Like, I'm really bad at calendars, but like, I'm wonderful on the day to day. So I think it can also just show up in different ways, but I wanted to tie it into the villain in a minute, but I want to hear what you have to say about time blindness before I talk about the villain, the reason why I'm bringing this up in terms of villains.
So one of the things that there's a book called 4,000 Weeks. It's called Time Management for Mortals, I'm pretty sure is the subtitle. And it is like the book that really opened my eyes to the nature of time. The author, I think it's like Oliver Backman, I want to say, Berkman, excuse me. He talks about the philosopher Heidegger, who talked about how life was time and how life doesn't exist without time, because you can't, like, you can't have change without time, you can't have all these different things, and how, like, we try and plan everything, but it doesn't really matter. And so for me, that really, like, shifted my view of time. But that doesn't mean that I didn't experience years as a project manager. And there are all these, like, crazy things. He actually mentions them in the book. Like, there's a law, which we'll have to put in the show notes, that talks about how everything that you estimate will take twice as long to do, right? Like, in project management, like, if you think something's going to take 2 days, it will take 4 days, right? It's almost like this weird, and if you say it's going to take 4 days, it'll take 8 days, right? Like, it's just this really strange thing. And so, you know, in project management, the manipulation of time is, like, a really important quality to be able to have. And yet it's so difficult because you're trying to contain things that are following laws that you can't even understand. So I feel like, I almost think of time blindness as, I feel like the perception of time and the management of your life within the flow of time is, like, a dimension of thinking. And some people just don't have that dimension of thinking in the same way, right? Whether it's on a short time, like you're talking about, like, I can't tell what 5 minutes is, or a long term of, like, what's 5 months from now. Like, I continually don't know where I am in the year. Like, I'll sometimes have to look outside and be like, the leaves are turning, we must be in fall.
Mm.
I genuinely have to just be like, I will sometimes find myself just kind of, like, blinking and just being like, wait, okay, I think we're in October. I think, you know, my kids are huge at being like, what's the day? How many days to this? And I'm always just like, I have no fucking clue. I have no idea. No idea when it is. So, you know, it's like we all have different placements in it in terms of what we track as time moves through us in our lives. Yeah.
Well, the thing I want to say is that if you have a spouse, or you live with your loved one, or you work in a job with other people, your time blindness does have an effect on others. And I think it's really important that we use technological tools or whatever tools we have to manage them. I think that these tools that are out there, AI and clocks and watches and timers, they exist to help us facilitate relationships with other people. And I think it's really important that people use these resources. So I'll give you an example of how I use them and how I think other villains should use them. I think a lot of the time blindness, like the hour to hour one, has a lot to do with the eternal child villain.
Yes,
because I see it a lot with eternal children. Like, they're very carefree and whimsical, and it doesn't really matter if I get there in time. And it's also the nothing, who thinks that their presence doesn't matter. So they think showing up on time is not really a big deal or not, because they don't really think that their presence is warranted. And I think for those people, it's really important to put timers on their phone. Like, if they tell someone 10 minutes, put a timer on your phone, 10 minutes. If they say, yeah, give me an hour, put a timer on your phone or on your watch, 1 hour, like gauge it synthetically. If you can't do it naturally, like, I really think that's important. And then one thing I've noticed in myself, and I don't know if it's true for how it would show up with other villains, but I know that, like, as the righteous bully and the obedient critics have a lot of this perfectionism.
Yes.
And in relationships, when a problem comes up, they want to fix it right then and there. Like, you pronounced a word, like I see with this patient, the couple that I work with, the husband will pronounce the word wrong or use, like, grammar incorrectly, and the wife immediately corrects him, or he'll say something and she immediately corrects him. There's a lot of this OC, you know, critical corrective stuff. Yep. And I see it in a friend of mine who has relationship OCD, where if the spouse does anything to bother her, she feels like she can't breathe until she brings it up to fix it, the way that, say, someone with OCD would say need to turn the light switch on and off 100 times. Mm-hmm. Right. Mm-hmm. And then I think with a righteous bully, it's also this sense of, like, this person must conform to my beliefs right away, immediately. And I think in those situations, this is what I do, is I just pull out my phone. Like, the other day, it was hilarious. We were having a disagreement, about time blindness. And I'm having a conversation with my husband, and I can feel the righteous bully coming up. And I know that the next thing out of my mouth is going to be mean. Like, I just know myself enough to recognize my villain. So I pull out my phone and I go to a week from now, and I write down, have a conversation with Eric about his time blindness. And then I close my phone and I'm like, hey, let's talk about this later. I gotta go. Bye. Because I know that there's like no good to come when I become a righteous villain. I'm too triggered. I need to like talk about it when I'm not triggered. But then the fear comes in that I'm gonna forget to talk about it. So I need to talk about it now while I'm still remembering it. But if I write it down in my calendar for the future and I know I am going to deal with this, I'm just going to deal at it at a better time when I'm in a better place, when the situation is not triggering, we're going to all be better for it. And I think that's true for the righteous bully and the obedient critic. So anyways, I was curious what you thought about this new strategy I'm having, which is working, I think.
I love it.
And then I'm wondering, like, what do you think other villains, how they would process time or facilitate relationships with time management tools?
So it's interesting you say that because I'll talk about this more when we get to the evasive expert, but the evasive expert has to slow down. That's like literally its most heroic thing that it can do, right? Is to slow down, because when you slow down, like the mind gets bored and it can't keep up, and it's going to keep trying to push you towards more and more and more intellectual things going on. And ultimately you have to slow down. And so I have this AI on my calendar that will put a decompress block, a 15 minute decompress block after every single one of my sessions. And then if there's a chunk of time, it'll block it out for focus. So it does it like a week in advance. It just like automatically puts these things in my calendar. And it is so good because it forces me to slow down and not just go session, 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 like I would typically do. And that is how one of the things that I do to kind of make it so that my nervous system doesn't get so out of whack from just like never, ever stopping. So I really love that as a tool. There are a number of different tools. I can't even remember the one that's doing mine at this point, but to be able to say what it is, but you know, having it insert into my calendar is great. That's a really, really wonderful thing. I think it's also important for the recognition of the fact that like with the OC, with the R, you know, the RB is going to go in and like, I love the fact that you put it in your calendar. I think that's amazing because you're absolutely right. It's like, I feel like sometimes the righteous bully will think that it has to say something immediately, or the OC, both of them. The RB has some of the OC in it. So the righteous bully has some of that OC. They have to fix it right then and there. And the righteous bully and even the divisive immortal will think that it's a matter of protection. Like, I have to tell you this because if I don't, you could be in danger or something bad could happen to you because you haven't fixed this. And like, I'm ultimately trying to like help you fix this, right? Whereas like the OC may be more compulsive about it or more obsessive about the mistake and they just need to fix it. You know, you're getting into that with both the divisive mortal and the righteous bully. They're going to be like, oh, well, this is your, you know, it's like the, for divisive immortal, a parent who would be like, we have to leave right now because if we don't, the traffic's going to be really bad and I'm going to have to crossover traffic in order to be able to take a left turn here, and it's really dangerous to take an unprotected left turn here, so I'm gonna like leave early to be able, like, seriously, this is like the catastrophist would think stuff like that. And that's how I used to think when I first had kids and I was like really anxious about their safety, stuff like that. So they all, I mean, we could do an entire episode on how each of them deal with time. Interestingly, the Hungry Shapeshifter was originally, the legend of the Hungry Shapeshifter was originally called the Time Traveler. But their legend is now, you know, is like the fabricator in presence, or like the hero and legend of that one, because there's a lot to be said for that one's ability to move through time in a very different way. Even Loki, Loki, an incredible series that Disney did for Loki, it ultimately leads to an understanding of time in a very specific way. So I won't spoil that for anybody who wants to watch that 3 or 4 year old TV series.
Oh, we're watching it. We're going through all the Marvel movies. My son wants to, and then I'm like, this is perfect. I'm going to learn about the villains.
One of my favorites is WandaVision and Loki and Agatha All Along are my 3 favorites. They're incredible. They're really good. So what are we talking about today, Anna?
We're just going to talk a little bit more, I think, in depth about some of these villains and what they look like and what conflict management, reversing the spin, looks like. I just thought we'd talk a little bit more about that today because a lot of feedback from friends and family who are listening to the episodes are like, well, this is really useful, but then what? What do we do? Like, what? Like, okay, I got this villain. I'm seeing the villain. Now what? Now what? So I kind of wanted to just go a little more in depth with some of these villains and what the awareness of them, what kind of steps to take next, and what that looks like in real life. And then I want to let our listeners know that the next episode we post is going to be all about each villain and how to communicate best with them. Kind of like when we did the Primal Wounds, we did a whole episode called Loving the Wounded. And we talked about like if your spouse or your loved one is a has a primary abandonment wound, these are the ways to talk to them and just kind of hone in on some like tools for working with other villains, right? Because we by now, if you're listening to the series, I'm sure you're recognizing the villains all over your workplace, your family, your home life. It's
Indeed.
hard to not see them now, you know?
It is. Like I said, I'm grateful for being able to see it. Sometimes I'm just like, all right, Christina, just cool out on the villains. Like we gotta see or the legends. But everything fits into it, and I'll talk more about that.
Before we get started, Chris, I want to just say we were in a group chat and you brought up the fact that the righteous bully is a combination of the vengeful martyr and the obedient critic, which you said in the beginning, but I wasn't mature enough to understand exactly what that is. And now that I'm like, I'm a primary vengeful martyr, but wait, I'm a righteous bully. I thought you said I was a vengeful martyr. And now I'm realizing, oh no, I have some obedient critic in me too. So naturally I'm a righteous bully. 'Cause I was like, did you know I was a righteous bully this whole time? Why didn't you say anything? Did you know?
I suspected, but I knew that your primary one of showing up was a vengeful martyr. And that
Right.
was like what, one of the things with the righteous bully is that you can't tell somebody they're a righteous bully because they'll get so pissed at
Oh, I
you.
told my sister she was one and she took it well.
Well, that's good.
I guess she's an outlier.
Yeah, she's an outlier. There are some people who are okay with it, but I think a lot of people will just be like, no, I'm not like that. And they'll kind of just brush it off. I feel like self-discovery is actually a lot better because, it helps to have somebody see it, but I feel like self-discovery is more useful. So more detail about this. Okay, so if you think about it in the Enneagram, we have 1, 2, 3, we have 4, 5, 6, and we have 7, 8, 9. 7, 8, 9 are the hungry shapeshifter, the righteous bully, and the invisible destroyer, which we call the nothing. And those 7, 8, 9 are more complex. They are what I would call advanced villains because they each have in them a combination. So if someone comes up to me and they're talking about their perfectionist tendencies, their imposter tendencies, and then I see that they are also like giving freely and like way giving up on their on like their time and energy, and that they're banking their like banking credits and like doing going above and beyond to be able to do something. I'm like, okay, I see both the obedient critic and the vengeful martyr, which means that they're most likely righteous bully, right? Because I can so clearly see, and I can't quite decide if it's one or the other. The other ones are the hungry shapeshifter is a combination of the vain controller and the eternal child. And if ever I see somebody who is like really concerned with status and also feels extremely entitled to the things that they have, which is the hallmark of the eternal child, or is like a, kind of becomes insulated from consequences within their own life, I'm like, oh, they're probably a hungry shapeshifter. Like ultimately, they're wanting attention. They're kind of wanting to shift around into all these different personas. And, they're not doing it like the vain controller for resources or like the eternal child for like love and being taken care of. They're doing it because they ultimately want attention and that they want they want the attention of other people. They don't care if it's negative attention because it's attention and that's all that really matters. And then the invisible destroyer. Is this is the one that I've resonated with so much is that the invisible destroyer is the evasive expert and the divisive immortal. And the reason that is because the way I think of it is that the evasive expert has this super strong intellect, and then behind it sits the dark passenger. That dark passenger often looks like the nothing, right? And the device of Immortal, because it's so concerned with safety and it's so concerned with everything along those lines, it's usually a really good reason why the Invisible Destroyer will sink back into their own space. So if ever I'm not sure, but I see hints of those two other ones, I'm like, okay, we're dealing with the nothing here. And it's kind of a diagnostic tool, and it's something that if you feel like you resonate with the one and the two and you don't know which one you are, the three and the four, you don't know which one you are, the five and the six, go to the more complex ones.
Right, right, right. That makes so much more sense. It's very interesting.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it is. So tell me more about your obedient critic, Anna.
Okay, so my obedient critic, I feel like, is perfect. No, just kidding. Obedient critic joke. My obedient critic, it's interesting because I started getting like obsessive about obedient critic and started being like, I had an argument with someone, a disagreement, let's say. And when I presented everything, I'm like, I didn't, you know, this really hurt my feelings. They couldn't understand that. I'm like, it's as if I did X, Y, and Z to you. And I related it to them in a way that they could understand. And I told you, hey, it worked. They understood me. And you said, that's because they can understand other people's rule sets. They can understand their own rule set. Mm-hmm. And which is a very obedient critic thing to do, right? Like, they can't understand others' rules. They only understand their own. And an example you gave me once was that, you know, people who have autism, they are often obedient critics because they have a very firm belief of like, this is the rule set. Like, it has to be chicken nuggets, and it has to be chicken nuggets from Burger King, right? Like, there's no straying from that.
Yeah.
And so to say this avocado tastes great, they might not understand, but you could say the avocado to me is like what your chicken nuggets are to you, kind of thing, right?
Yes, exactly.
So being able to, when you're having like a disagreement with someone, I'm thinking it's really, really good when the person is just having a hard time seeing your way. They might be an obedient critic, and to try your best to like make an allegory of like why, of like conforming your point of view to their logic. But anyways, back to my obsession, I started getting obsessed. Like, what if everything is just rule sets? What if my entire reality is being held together by these spiderweb threads of illusion of rules? Like, it's all rule sets. It's all my belief systems. And like, it's so fragile. And should it all collapse? Should I make it all collapse? And then I'm like, no, if I make it all collapse, then where's my structure? But like, I'm having a hard time a little bit. I don't know if this is getting too existential, but I'm having a hard time right now wondering like, what rules should I get rid of and what rules should I keep? And then I just tell myself before I go to sleep, like, as I sleep, let me let go of any rule sets that aren't serving me anymore. And let me hold close the ones that are, you know, like, cause I really, it's just so complicated. I'm just like, which rules are good, which rules are bad.
Yeah. Yeah.
I shouldn't say good or bad. I should say, you know, serving or not.
Absolutely. Marshall Thurber, who I met through Eric, Anna's husband, and spent some really great time with Marshall. He did a TED talk in Melbourne years ago, and he basically said, there are so many different rules and guidelines and principles that you could base your life on. His philosophy was based on laws of nature. Right. And his whole TED talk is about the law of precession, which is genuinely so incredibly enjoyable to me, which is the idea that you can't head directly towards your goals. Your purpose in life comes 90 degrees off of whatever you're heading towards. Right. It's like the money and the honey thing. Like, you don't head towards the money, you head towards the honey, and the money will follow. That kind of idea. And so that's one of the things that I like to do.
Can you explain that better? Sorry.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. So a bee, a honeybee, their goal is to get nectar. Their purpose is to pollinate flowers. If a bee were to go directly to a flower to pollinate it, it would not achieve its goal. So it goes towards the nectar, and it happens to rub its butt up against the pollen. And then as it's on its goal to get the nectar, it fulfills its purpose, which is to pollinate the flowers, right? Uh-huh. And so the honey, so to speak, is the nectar, like head towards the honey, and then the abundance will follow, because by the bee going towards the nectar it pollinates the flowers, which means that it will get more honey in the future. It will get more nectar in the future because it's helping to do that, right? And so that's called the law of precession. It's like a fundamental law of nature that your purpose comes 90 degrees off of anything you do. So it's like, just do the thing. And don't, that's why whenever anybody says, oh, this is my purpose and I'm heading towards my purpose, I'm supposed to feed people in this place, in this place, I'm just like, is that your honey? Or are you going to actually, you know, are you going to find that if you head directly towards it, you end up doing something entirely different with your purpose? A lot of people talk about purpose and being, having a purpose driven life. And I'm like, no, have a honey driven life, have a honey driven life, and your purpose will come off of that.
Which is why you always say follow your inspiration.
Exactly. Exactly. Nice. Nice. Yeah. So that's what I mean, is like, go towards universal principles as much as possible. One of my favorites is the universe is neutral. And I'm like, you know, nothing is good or bad. That thinking doesn't make it so. That's what Hamlet said, right? Thinking is what determines everything as judging it good or bad. And if we can recognize the universe is neutral, it helps us when things get really tough.
Right. Although there's that also that saying, you know, keep your mind open as a parachute, but if it's too open, your brains will fall out. You know, there's it's also
too. Yeah. Yeah. Well, that's the balance part. You have to bring balance into it. Balance is a fundamental law of nature. So yeah.
Yeah. Well, okay. Going back to OC, I'll just give another example of like why this was really useful. As a friend of mine got in an argument with her mother, because her mother was a single mother of five children with a husband after the divorce basically disappeared. And so she raised five kids all on her own, and she was an immigrant. And so she had to, you know, learn a second language and learn how the laws here work. And she created a business, and she was able to financially support her children, even though she was, you know, not educated to do so. She defied all the laws, started a business, and she was able to raise all five kids. Now, my friend has two children, and she was telling me how, you know, one time she asked her mom on her anniversary when the kids were like 2 and 3, hey mom, will you babysit the kids so me and my husband can go on a date? And she goes, well, why should I? I did it all on my own. You should be able to do it all on your own. So she did it. And so my friend, to be a kind of a passive aggressive bitch, which is hilarious, asked the mom's best friend to babysit because she knew the mom's best friend would say yes. And then the mom would get jealous, which is hilarious, like funny drama.
Yeah. Yeah.
But then, you know, fast forward now, the boys are actually teenagers. And she was, you know, talking to her mom, and she's like, you know, I really wish you were more involved in the boy's life. Like, she didn't say it this way, but, you know, mom, you're aging and you don't have as many years left, and you should take advantage of the boys being close, near, you know, living in the same city, and spend some time with them. And the mom was like, well, why should I? I did it all alone. I raised five kids all by myself. I never asked for help. Why do you need to ask for help? You only have two of them and you have a husband. And my friend said, you know, she's like, I know your story, and I'm sorry that happened, but your life lesson out of it is that one should not ask for help is not the life lesson that I want to get from your story. I want a different story. And I want my story to be that it's okay to ask for help, and that there's no shame in asking for loved ones for help. And there's no shame in wanting your family to be involved with your children. That's my story. And they got in a big clash, and they haven't spoken. And I was talking to her about it. And I was like, this is the classic case of two obedient critics. Like, mm-hmm. You have your rule set, which is, you know, children, grandparents should be involved in the children's life. Your belief system is, you know, mothers or parents should be allowed to ask for help and get it. And her belief system is, if I had to suffer, then you should too. And I agree with one of these people, but that's just my OC, right? But mm-hmm. Fundamentally, there is no correct belief system. Like I told her, I said, I'm on your side 100% because I believe in what you're saying, but I haven't lived your mom's life, and I don't know what her rule sets are. And she has a totally different rule set than you and I, and her world, her rule set's just as valid. So, you know, it was just a really interesting kind of epiphany for her to realize that, like, maybe her mom's not wrong. Her mom has a different rule set, and she has a different rule set. And we talked, and at the end of it, she's like, you know what? I'm just going to accept my mom for that. She is who she is, and she doesn't want to offer help. But because of my rule set, when my children have kids, I'm going to be the most active, present grandmother ever, because that's all the only control I have over my OC, my obedience. I thought that was really cool.
That's brilliant. That's brilliant. Yeah.
Tell me a little bit about you and your evasive expert.
Yes. So one of the things that became very apparent, and I mentioned this in the last episode, is that, not only do people resonate in villains, but couples resonate in a villain, and houses represent, like, I talk about the med I've talked about the medicine of place before, right? This idea that like a place resonates a certain way with you, right? And that not only that, but also cities, towns, states, countries, all those things, all of them have a villain that they're in. It's like a stage and an arc that they're in. And when you interact with it or when you see it, you're going to see something specific. With something as big as a country, you could ask five different people what villain, who knew the villain system with it. You could ask five different people what villain the United States is in. I would say that the United States is in the hungry shapeshifter in many ways because everybody's constantly trying to get attention for one thing or another. But it's also a little bit of, you can see an evasive expert aspect in it. You can see an eternal child. You could see a lot of things. And depending on how you resonate and how you are perceiving what is going on in the country right now, like you're going to see a different villain. And so what became really apparent when I came back from my trip was that my house was the evasive expert. And as a reminder, the evasive expert has a very intellectual exterior and a very kind of rotten core in the sense of it's got a lot, it's basically ruled, it thinks it's ruled by its intellect, but it's actually ruled by its subconscious feeling part that has not been integrated or acknowledged in any sort of way. And so I, in May, had an intuition that my house might have mold in it. I got it tested. And we found that there was mold. There was not black mold. And we were like, okay, it's bad, but we can kind of maybe remediate this. And then, it could have been like a really one and done easy experience. And my husband, who is very evasive expert, then went into this deep research phase for a very, very long time, came up with this idea of getting air filters. And, that were really, really fantastic air filters and kind of like being okay with it. But then in September, we went away for 2 weeks and we found that my daughter stopped having anxiety. My husband was able to sleep again, like all of these things. And that's a very common thing that you do with mold is you take a vacation from the place that you think has mold. And if your symptoms go away, then it's an indication of what's actually being affected. So that's like a very common thing to do to see if mold is affecting you. And I was like, holy shit, not only is my relationship the evasive expert because my husband and I overthink so much, and we kind of don't acknowledge the kind of deeper, pain that we feel from a lot of like our emotions and things like that. We kind of default to let's just talk about it, think about it, go really fast, and not do anything else with it. And then I was like, and my house is filled with books. And it has mold behind the walls, right? So it's like the books, like even in the card in the Oracle deck that we're creating, the image is literally a person sitting at a desk that's made of books, and the books are moldy. And there's like this big wall behind the person who's like concentrating on the books, and there's these two giant black eyes that are like behind the fence, right? And that was the image that I channeled and that Megan created. And that is 100% how it feels in my family. And then I was like, holy shit, my house is the evasive expert, and my fucking town is the evasive expert. My town has a university, which is that intellect, right? And then it has a fucking the what the rotting remnants of what used to be the largest mental hospital in the world. Like 25 or 30,000 people are buried in these unmarked potter's fields across the river. And I'm just like, oh my God, my town is the f and then not only that, but my town, the biggest complaint I've had about my town from the beginning is that it's so compartmentalized, right? It's like there's the church crowd, there's the university crowd, there's like this crowd, and then there's like and nobody's talking. Like nobody talks at all. There's no like central place in which everybody knows what's going on. It's a small town, but the only way that you can find out anything's happening is if you get into an in crowd, which to me, the compartmentalizer is a part of the arc of the evasive expert. And I'm like, holy shit, my town is 100% an evasive expert town. One of the things that my husband and I have been doing is trying to find our hero in this arc. And we came up, we've done a lot of work, and it's been a really beautiful thing in which I basically gave him, I played the game with him, the game that we're creating for the Oracle deck. And I created a cheat sheet for him so he could know all the different types. And what we did, we created a large piece of paper. We put it into four segments, like four quadrants. And on the far reaches of all the four quadrants, we basically talked about the pinnacle villain, which is the evasive expert. We talked about the successful antagonist, which is the overthinker. We talked about the wounded child, which is the oversensitive. And then we also talked about the covert, which is the compartmentalizer. So we talked about our relationship and how our relationship and was most, when it showed up as its most villainous in all four of these different ways. And then we were like, okay, what are the gifts that we can find from this? This is how we were inverting it, changing the spin. And we put all the gifts and the legendary qualities of each of those things that we did in the center of the page, like towards the middle of the quadrant. And after doing this, and my husband really, because he really resonates in the evasive expert a lot, like personally, and I did before, but I talked about this. I talked about my evasive expert before I even had a word for it, when I talked about the dark passenger back in season two of TSF. He was named Hermes and I dealt with him in the meditation, the Marissa Peer meditation. What is that called again?
The RTT.
RTT. Thank you. Rapid Transformational Therapy. That's when I deal with the bulk of my evasive expert. And so we came up with an acronym because one of the things that we started to recognize is the evasive expert has qualities when you want to turn it to its heroic. And this is our acronym. Our acronym is FUNNY, because the thinker and the overthinker is never funny. Like, people who are super intellectual, like, try and be funny, but they're not fundamentally funny, because funny comes from a different part. It doesn't come from the transactional mind. So FUNNY stands for F is free, because you need to be free and have time to slow down. Well, I talked about slowing down earlier in this. It's absolutely critical that you slow down in order to be able to invert this villain. U is united. Luke talks so much about how he feels so alone and kind of isolated, because we divide and conquer everything, right? And that is a really, really lonely life, right? When you're just like, okay, well, you do this and I'll go do this, and we don't do anything together. It's a really sad experience to just have so many things that you're meant to do. And you're just like, okay, well, I'm going to go and mow the lawn. I mean, you can't mow the lawn with somebody else, but I'm going to go work on the RV and you're going to go do this. And it's just like, it's a really sad reality. And as soon as we start doing it together, we're laughing. We're like having fun. We're just like totally united in whatever we're doing. And we're not overthinking things. We're just kind of feeling things out together. N is for nuanced, because the evasive expert is all or nothing thinking. And so we have to find the nuance. Yes, we might move out of our house. Does that mean that we've lost everything? There have been times that I've thought that, because insurance won't cover it, because of this, because of that. And I'm just like, no, this is not going to last forever. Like, I have to be nuanced in my thinking. The other N is for natural, which we had to fit it into the acronym, but natural stands for embodied. What are we feeling at this moment? How are we actually pulling our emotions and using our instinct instead of just our mind? And why is for you? So free, united, nuanced, natural you. And so we just look at each other and we say, is this funny? Because it also has a double meaning of like, are right. we laughing?
Are you doing things like going to the grocery store together now? Or like, what are you guys, how are you not doing the divide and conquer? Because we're a divide and conquer marriage here too. Like, we're not the marriage that like we cook together. I'd be like, get the fuck, you know, we are divide and conquer as well. Like, what are you guys doing?
So what we're doing is we are cooking together. We're occasionally cooking together. We don't always get to, I mean, it's like, it's a work in progress, right? It's like, we're always doing that. If we do work on the property, we're trying to do it together. We're not trying to go into like our own little space with our headphones on. Again, it's like, you know, we're trying to go on walks together. We're trying to, you know, just do more things that we have to do, like go walk the dog. Why don't you go walk the dog together? You know, and if we have to do something that's unpleasant, like, oh, we have to go mow the, you know, get all the stuff, mow the orchard or blah blah blah, any of these different things. You know, I created a concept called Golden Hour that we've been trying to bring back. Golden Hour is when all four of us actually go out for an hour and try and conquer a project together, right? Where we're all doing it and get the kids involved, get us involved, and really like make it a part of achieving something greater. So it's more, it's like, if one person's unloading the dishwasher, the other person's going to get up and help unload the dishwasher, right? You know, it's not just like, even if it's not that person's job per se, right? If one person's doing like cleaning this, the other person's going to kind of join in and just start to talk and just trying to slow down and just be like, yeah, it's not going to all fit, get done. But if we just rush through and divide and conquer everything in our lives, we're going to be very lonely and we will have achieved everything, but it's not where we want to be in our relationship.
Do you think the loneliness though also comes from the fact that you guys are so isolated on your property? Because we divide and conquer, but I don't really feel lonely because my job is so social. I don't know if that's why.
So I feel the same way because my job is very social as well. And, you know, Luke has the reality of the fact that like he's always wanted to be a part of a community that like thought in a similar way to he did and like looked at ancestral ways. And also he's the homemaker. Right. And he doesn't get a lot of exposure to other people. So that one is more for him. But I also really enjoy just like spending more time with him and not feeling like, you know, I'm going to go do this and make money and you're going to go do that. Like, we're just like, no, let's just see if we can't enjoy the act of having to be adults for a little bit.
You don't think this is the whole manipulative play for you, him to get you to do more of his work? Just kidding.
I love that.
I love how you stopped and like thought about it.
Of course. I would totally think about that. So yeah. So in a lot of ways, ultimately, if I had to say, what the fuck am I doing about my house? I don't really know. I'm waiting for clarity. And that's really fucking hard to sit in ambiguity. That's one of the things the evasive expert will never do. They will research the shit out of everything in an effort to try and find clarity when clarity has to come through time.
What if you tried dancing us to a solution or laughing to a solution or microdosing to a solution? I don't know. I'm just wondering if like, what if the solution is to be found in non-cerebral ways? I don't know.
Exactly. Exactly. That's what I'm trying to say. Like it is non-cerebral ways, like 100%. Like it is like you cannot think about a solution when it is incredibly apparent that the solution is not going to come by thinking about it. Right. So yeah. Mm-hmm. It's a very interesting thing. Yep.
Well, it's funny that you talked about your house being the evasive expert and you said like my house is the obedient critic because like I really want everything in the right place and I'm a little bit obsessive compulsive about it. But you know what? I like my house being obedient critic and I'm just going to enjoy that and not try to put the spin on my villain there because I do like it. I don't know.
Yeah.
I mean, is it okay to have a villain based house?
No, all houses. That's what I'm trying to say. If you don't think of it as a villain and instead as an arc, okay. Like when I visited all the places that I visited, I met mostly legendary houses.
So what's the legend of the OC?
Is the equalizer. I would say that your house very much so also resonates in Vengeful Martyr. And the reason I say that is because
I'm bitching in the kitchen. Just kidding.
Because the kitchen is such a central part of the house. Because the act of serving and nourishing is
nourishment. It's like my major language of love.
Exactly. And so that's
why I think it's cultural though. I think it's my culture.
But that makes perfect sense. But that there are cultures that also resonate in a certain villain arc.
Right.
In a certain arc, right? And so you make a house and you resonate with a house and you're like, I love this house because it's got a kitchen that is completely central to everything. And you can see all parts of the world while you nourish. And it's such a massive part. Like your house completely centered, the hearth of your house is your kitchen. Right. And so that's why I feel like yours is very Vengeful Martyr. Megan's the same way, right? Like it's like the kitchen is the central part of it. Like you don't go into the other rooms. You spend your time in the kitchen and around the kitchen.
No, that makes sense.
And it doesn't have to be a kitchen. It can be whatever nourishes you. Like if the piano nourishes in my house, you could say that the piano is central in our house or that we actually have a hearth in it, and that those are the things that nourish us, but we don't use them. So it's like, it's very different than what you would say. So I would say that there's both. Like Robbie, for instance, complete, she's the extreme of the obedient critic arc, or the equalizer, right? In the sense that like everything has its place. Like she's even more so than your house, right? In terms of OC.
And I'm jealous of her house.
Yeah.
For how clean it is.
Right. But you go into her kitchen and everything is pre-cooked and set out in the thing. You know what I mean?
Right.
It's like everything. It's like the kitchen is not the central part of that house.
Right. Right. Well, it's interesting because I spent time over fall break in a Hungry Shapeshifter house and I was hungry all the time. And I'm like, why am I always eating in this house? It was driving me freaking nuts. I'm like, every time I'm in this house, all I do is eat.
That's amazing.
And then I'm like, and the Hungry Shapeshifter of the house is always eating, which is hilarious. But then when it was hilarious because when I was like, I'm in a Hungry Shapeshifter house and I'm feeling the energy of hungry shapeshifting, as soon as I had that aha moment, I was able to stop and just eat my three meals a day again, instead of like eating 20 mini meals all day, like the Hungry Shapeshifter of the house.
Wow.
It was really funny. He's still tiny. It's just hilarious.
Yeah. But he's got this energy that is just constantly taking in and constantly going and being everything and like interacting with everything. It's no wonder it's kind of probably feels like a frenetic energy, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. Well, I wanted to talk a little bit about the righteous bully, just a little bit further about not necessarily me as a righteous bully, because I'm not one anymore. Just kidding. Just kidding.
You're not a pinnacle villain, but you're still on the arc.
I'm still on the arc. Don't worry. Is that a friend of mine? Okay. I'll put it this way. A friend of mine was having some relationship issues with her husband, who is the nothing, or as you call, the invisible destroyer.
Yes.
And she is the righteous bully. And it was like fascinating for me to watch it, because it was like watching myself in slow motion. And I have an ex that was a nothing, I think. Like in retrospect, I'm like, this person was a nothing. And I could see like how the nothing and the righteous bully show up with each other. And it was like, it was just all these aha moments in slow motion. So she's like, you know, I'm really worried about this relationship. What have I done wrong? And, you know, and it was just like, oh my gosh, I was able to like give really good counsel. Cause I was like, well, you're being a righteous bully. Like you're thinking that the relationship has to always be perfect. And if it's not always perfect in the way that you define perfection, that something's wrong. And if something's wrong, the part of the partner that is wrong must be destroyed or castrated or attacked or whipped into shape to conform to what you think is right. Yep. And they're the nothing. So when you do something like that, you're pushing them more into their desire to disappear. And, but their disappearing is making you more upset, because when they disappear, you feel abandoned, which is like very vengeful martyr attribute of the righteous bully, which is the vengeful martyr in the OC, the obedient critic, and the obedient critic wants the relationship to be perfect. So it was like just a really, really wonderful situation to be able to help a righteous bully in the storm of being with a nothing. And then it was really interesting because you and I started talking and I was reflecting on all my patients, because in my job, for those new to the podcast, I'm a physical therapist and I go into the home of geriatric patients. And, you know, like most of them, if not all of them, are married.
Yep.
And so, and they're retired and they have a primary caregiver, because the person I'm dealing with is usually disabled and their caregiver is usually the able-bodied one taking care. And so I see a lot of marriage dynamics, and it's like unbelievable how many righteous bullies end up with nothings.
Yes.
And then I'm like, does the righteous bully create the environment for someone to become a nothing? Or are nothings attracted to righteous bullies because they know that the righteous bully is going to show up more in the relationship? And I mean, there's just like all these questions I have about chicken and egg. I've just noticed there's like these, what kind of other relationships have you noticed that are like common matches?
So I've seen a lot of righteous bullies and nothings, probably more so than any of them. You can also see eternal children and vengeful martyrs, or eternal children and righteous bullies, but mostly the two and the four together, like so, so common.
What's the two and the four? Sorry.
The two and the four, sorry, is the vengeful martyr and the eternal child.
Okay, right. Because it's the Wendy and the baby.
It's the Wendy and the Peter Pan. Yep. The other thing that I find is that evasive experts and divisive immortals will often go together as well, because One is incredibly unemotional about the possibility of everything that can go wrong, and so can feels like they're competent, or that that they're going to be able to do something the evasive expert does. Whereas the divisive immortal is so concerned with safety and so concerned with is so incredibly loyal that they'll be loyal to an evasive expert despite the fact that the evasive expert may just be going through the motions because they don't actually feel the connection with somebody else, right? And so that one, I often find that one is together. And then sometimes you can get the obedient critic and the vengeful martyr will come together as two sides of the codependent coin, right? So both of them are reflections of codependence. Whereas the vengeful martyr, they deal with their codependence by effectively throwing their energy at it, and the obedient critic, throws status and rules at it, right? They're kind of
Oh my
both
gosh,
doing
totally
that.
see that. And I think also obedient critics, just like the vengeful martyr, will often show up with eternal children because the eternal child kind of likes being corralled and nitpicked and mothered. And the obedient critic likes having that someone who is so flawed and immature to feel superior towards or have purpose with.
The other thing you'll find is that hungry shapeshifters will oftentimes be with the nothing as well, or with the evasive ex. They'll be with somebody who's not as loquacious, not as talkative, right? So whoever is showing up as kind of being more muted in social conversations, the seven will oftentimes go with them because they'll be the life of the party. Like if you ever see somebody who's like super entertaining, who's married to someone who is absolutely not entertaining at all, and you're just like, what? Like, what is that? That's very,
Yes.
very common.
Oh my yes, yes. So this a very close family friend of ours, she's totally the hungry shapeshifter. She's like the best hostess, best cook, best entertainer, and her husband is totally just the nothing. He's just over here. He's amazing and he's brilliant and he's hilarious, but he's seriously just sitting in a chair disappearing.
And honestly, this is going to sound crazy, but vein controllers find it very hard to find happy couples. I usually find that they're single.
Vein controllers. Oh, interesting. Interesting.
That is not always the case. But for them, the idea of hard work and success is like so much more important than the kind of trappings of a relationship, that they just want to spend all their energy creating and inventing and gaining more resources. And if they see that a partnership creates resources for them, then they'll do that, but it'll be a strategic move, right? And not like I fall in love move.
And maybe also eternal children don't want to commit because of the responsibility of a relationship and having to kind of grow up in order to be in one, I would think.
Yes, but the covert of that form is the romantic, so they're the love bombers,
Oh,
right? And
right.
they think that they're like, oh, I want to do this, and so they yo-yo between avoidance and anxious in that way, and so that's where it's like ultimately they're just looking for somebody to look after them, right? And that's why you have all so many lost boys. That's kind of what I call so many lost boys. So yeah.
Right. Well, I wanted to just give a couple funny memes that I found this week that have to do with the villains, and I thought I'd just share them on here. I don't know where they even came from because I screenshotted them. Sorry, I can't reference them, but there's this one. I thought it was hilarious, and I'll ask you which villain you think it is.
Okay.
Everyone is fighting a battle you don't know about, except for me. I'm complaining loudly about my battle. Everybody knows about it.
I would say that's probably Eternal Child.
Yes, that's exactly what I thought. I was like, this is the eternal child. Every eternal child I know is like wearing their trauma as a badge of honor when it's like, and a lot of times their trauma isn't even that like traumatic. Okay, this is hilarious. So tell me what villain this is. This is coming from at the Ortega's Party of Six.
Okay.
My wife is a really easy person to love. All she needs is quality time, but not too much, then she'll feel suffocated. Time to go away. Words of affirmation, but not too cheesy, you'll make her uncomfortable. And acts of service, but it has to be done her way. And if not, you're just doing it wrong.
Yeah, obedient critic.
Yeah.
She's got so many rules. Again, I just love that you can like make a joke out of somebody being in a certain way, and then you're like, and there is coming back from this. It's not just a personality that's stuck. It's like that idea of no bad parts, right? That's why I like
Okay.
that IFS can be incorporated into this, which we can talk about in a second, but yeah.
Yeah. Okay, another one, Chris. What villain is this? Okay, this is from at Emily K. May. Been working on feeling my feelings instead of intellectualing my feelings, and it's awful. Can totally see why I've never done this.
Yes, evasive expert.
Yeah. Okay, what villain is this? This is at Rachel Beachy writes. Important question. Do you picture the Muffin Man as a man who sells muffin or a muffin with a face? My husband and I are arguing.
Want to say righteous bully. I don't even know. What would you say that one is?
Oh, I don't know. I thought that it was Obedient Critic.
It's a
Like,
little bit obedient critic
yeah.
that they're having a fight over something. No, you're right. It's totally obedient critic. Yeah.
All right.
If they were to destroy the other person because they disagreed, then that would be the righteous bully, right?
I always saw the Muffin Man, by the way, as a muffin with a human body and little face.
I always thought that the Muffin Man was a human and he baked muffins.
I know. All right. What villain is this? This is at It's Nash Flynn. If you can't handle me at my worst, then same. At least you get to leave.
That's a good question. I would say that's probably a vein controller.
Oh, really? I was thinking it was the nothing because they're just like, oh, I want
Oh, I could totally see that as well. I was saying vein controller because they would totally own the fact that they're awful. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
They would just be like, oh, I'm awful, but I'm successful.
All right. This one's at this one over here. Tell me what villain this is.
Okay.
A haunted house, but every room is just a different person chewing.
That's probably evasive expert because they're super sensitive. They're like get overstimulated very easily because they don't have their nervous system under like they aren't in tune with their nervous system.
Yes. Okay, last one. What villain is this? This is at X Exclusionary. I have a mental illness that makes me think that people will change their minds if I present the correct arguments with the appropriate facts and data.
Okay, so I would say that's evasive expert
Yeah.
again, right? It's super logical. Could also be an aspect of the righteous bully. I was talking with someone earlier today about the fact that they were seeing that their child was turning into a righteous bully and was on the same arc. And they were like, but I've been working on that for so long. I was like, yeah, but you see the younger version of you in your child, and that younger version is you see them doing things that you got ostracized for. So you're wanting to fix them, but in the process of fixing them, you are falling into the role of what happened to you, which is that somebody always said, well, you're not doing the right thing, and you're not like, no one's going to want to be friends with you if you say that, right? Like that kind of like righteous bully thing of just like, I'm going to fix you right now. Like you're not doing it right, right? And like in the process of doing that, perpetuating this cycle of being like, you experienced the righteous bully growing up and now you're doing it to your child, right? And it's a really hard thing to break out of when you're just like, but I want to save her from the pain. I was like, you don't save your kid from the pain. You don't, you're, there's nothing to do to fix. The only thing that you can do is help them become a leader of their own system and help them be okay with making mistakes and thinking that ultimately you don't have to fix it.
All right, I got three more memes. They're not intended for any villain in particular, just
Okay.
villain work in general.
Yep.
This one, evil attachment style.
I love
Okay, the other one, it's a picture of a cat staring at itself in the mirror, looking really evil. And it says, when you're contemplating whether to be the bigger person or the bigger problem. And last one, in honor of our villain work here, it says, in a world full of fake victims, be
be
the
the villain. I really like that one. I really appreciate that one. That's amazing. Yeah. So if I had to, I've kind of mentioned a couple of different ways in which you can handle your villain. And I think one of the most basic part is to recognize that there's a lot of different things that we're dealing with here. If you are a fan of human design, we're talking about inverting your villain or stopping the spin of your villain is all about deconditioning a center. If you're an IFS fan, recognize that you don't just have one part that's a villain. You have many, many parts that are acting as foot soldiers on behalf of your villain and your strategy. So you can use IFS as a tool, internal family systems, as a tool to be able to actually help deal with a villain and recognize that you have all these parts that are basically serving this strategy. What I find to be one of the most effective things, and I kind of described it earlier with the evasive expert work that I've done, is to do that process of like, I'm going to look at all different subtypes. I'm going to see how I'm villainous. I'm going to see what could be a really good thing to pull from this. So an example would be with the sensitive. For Luke and I, when we did the sensitive and we were like, what's the problem with being the sensitive? The sensitive means that we are really sensitive to the environment around us. Like our house, where we wanted to escape to the country because we spent 3 years in the city and we hated it. And so we became super sensitive. So together we made a decision to go to one of the most isolated spots you can imagine that is still, you know, 10 minutes from a town. What is the gift of that? Is that the gift of that is now we have nature, and nature is the great balancer, right? It's like we went from a villainous intent of being overstimulated, right? And we ended up in nature, and nature is actually a gift for us, right? And so you can do that with all of these other aspects. You can look at all those subtypes, you can flip and invert and be like, what did I do? Because this was a problem for me, like because I was being villainous and non-loving and non-integrative to myself, what is the gift that I can pull from that? And then how can I then move on from this? Like, I don't need this to rule me anymore. And I can change the spin of this. I can invert these qualities that, because I exist on all parts of the arc at the same time. Sometimes one just resonates more than another. So that's how I would recommend doing that. And if you go back and listen to the episodes, as well as a lot of the things that I'm kind of coming out with, we're going to be making little journeys for how people can do at least the basic work for inverting it and then start to get groups together towards the end of the year.
I cannot wait to do it because I'm just winging it over here.
You're doing an amazing job. That's the thing. You're doing an amazing job, right?
I'm loving it.
Yeah. Yeah. So all good.
Yeah. Yeah. And then next week, we're going to have a really interesting episode about different communication tools you can use with your villainous partner. So I guess your homework between this week and the next episode is to diagnose your partner's villain and then make fun of them for it. No, just kidding. No, but diagnose your own villain. If you haven't taken Chris's quiz on her website, what is it? ChrisWiltsy.com.
ChristinaWiltsy.com. Yep.
Okay. ChristinaWiltsy.com. And then, you know, I think if you've gotten this far in the villain series, you've been able to piece together what your partner or your loved one, what villain they probably are.
Yeah.
At this point. Yeah.
Exactly. And know that this is a really interesting little thing. I think I may have said this earlier. I always find it so funny. If I go through the results, like the anonymous results of like what everybody picked, the vast majority of people end up being vengeful martyrs because that feels like the best thing to be. You know what I'm saying? Like,
oh, because the martyr is such a heroic villain in our culture.
Exactly. Exactly. Right. They want to look at themselves as benevolently as possible.
Right. Vengeful martyr is the cutest villain.
Exactly.
Not that there's cute villains, but you know, they're the ones over here sacrificing themselves, which is very praised upon in our culture.
Yep. And if you think about the righteous bully being the higher father wound, you go back to the father wound work and how impactful that was for you.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm,
right.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, totally. Totally. Yeah. Well, this is good. I don't want to hang up.
I know. It's really nice. It's really nice to talk to you. And I really,
I know. Okay. This, we got to get the next one on the books.
All right.
Thanks everyone. Bye.
Bye. Thank you so much for listening to this episode of The Spiritual Fix. If you are interested in finding out what your primary inner villain is, you can go to www.christinawiltsy.com to take the test that is linked. That's KristinaWiltsey.com. Thanks, y'all. And remember,
humility, gratitude, acceptance, done.
Hello, TSF family. We wanted to start off by saying thank you. Thank you for listening to this podcast and for your hard work to love yourself more and for your feedback.
Can you believe it's been 3 years that we've been doing this spiritual fix, and it has been such a beautiful labor of love for Anna and me.
We have loved doing this work. We've loved hearing from you, and we love exploring ourselves and each other alongside our listeners.
We wanted to put out the call for 3 ways that you can help support us to support you.
One, we would love you to leave us a review on iTunes or follow us on Spotify.
2, drop us an email and let us know how much the podcast means to you.
And 3, you can donate monthly or even just once to our PayPal patronage.
Every little bit helps, and we are so grateful to those of you who have donated already. Thank you.
You help make this podcast possible.
Thanks, y'all. You can go to our website, www.thisspiritualfix.com, for information on how to pledge as well as to email us. Hi, y'all. Christina from TSF here, This Spiritual Fix. I wanted to invite you to my Substack, where we are about to start a series on the inner villains, the parts of us that sabotage, control, or quietly hide when things get hard. These upcoming posts will walk you through how to recognize them, work with them, and eventually transform them. They're going to be a wonderful complement to what we're hearing here on TSF. And if you are a paid subscriber, you'll also get a new meditation each month to support that integration. You can find it all at christinawiltsy.substack.com or search The Life Alchemist. Thanks, y'all.